Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care, working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Every Wednesday, join us as we explore heart health and homeopathy, a show co-hosted by Homeopathy World Community founder and homeopath Debbie Brook, with Dr. Adil Chimthanawala Kasim, MD cardiologist. We invite you to comment and call in to contribute your questions. Let's go.
Hi, this is Debbie Brook, founder of Homeopathy World Community. Today is November 22, 2011. We are starting the show a half an hour early due to daylight savings time in the U.S. We have to reschedule these things and get on the same page when we're speaking to people across the other end of the world. And Dr. Adil is in India calling in, and we've also been having some difficulties with our sound lately, and it looks like he's been able to call in and hopefully hear us. We're going to do a short 30-minute show,
Hi.
Hi. Oh, it sounds good today, Dr. Adil. We are so pleased to have you come on to the show. The last couple of weeks, every time we've tried to schedule, you have been a very busy physician and doing a lot of traveling. But every time I talk to you, you're very excited about the show and the responses that you have had from people around the world.
Yeah, indeed, Debbie. I'm indebted to the show because I can serve a lot many new people out there in the world waiting for some homeopathic help for cardiological disorders. Recently, one mail was also sent to you. A small baby who had got tricuspid stenosis, a valvular stenosis, along with left heart failure, an absent right heart. So the baby we could save, and it's now more than a month that the baby is still alive and kicking well, only because of homeopathic remedies, because allopaths had given up hope on that baby.
Did you explain to the listeners what had happened to that little baby?
Well, what happened was, after one of the doctors, a homeopath, was hearing this show, I think on pulmonary hypertension when we were having the show, he was hearing that. And coincidentally, he happened to have one patient, a small baby, a just-born baby, 4 days old baby, a male child, admitted in one of the very big hospitals of Bangalore, India. That baby, when the baby was born, the baby did not have the right heart. I mean, the entire right heart was absent.
Really?
Right ventricle, I mean. And so the parents were in a fix what to do. The doctors had given up hope. They were not willing to put the baby on ventilator. The baby was born, did not cry, and they had given up chances on the survival of the baby. This doctor remembered my talk, rather, and he called me up whether if I could help. I said, why not? And then we started the baby on Carbovig. The oxygen saturation of that baby was only 80. The normal oxygen saturation at the age of 4 days should be at least 97%. It was only 80%. After starting Carbovig CM, on the symptoms that the doctor told me, in a day's time, we achieved an oxygen saturation of 92%. I stopped Carbovig CM. We had given 4 hourly, one drop, and we stopped that drug and continued on Antimtat again on CM for 2 or 3 days, and the baby really improved well. The baby was discharged. The baby is feeding well, and it's more than a month now. And the baby is alive, doing very well. We are about to do that echo of the baby. And I'm so happy that a life could be saved just because of this talk show. Had not the doctor, the homeopathic doctor, heard about the show, he wouldn't have contacted me. And alas, the baby would, I don't know, I mean, God forbid, anything would have happened to the baby.
It doesn't seem possible that a human could survive if the ventricle was missing.
Yeah, it is so, I mean, it is known a fact that the babies do expire or succumb to their absent left ventricle or right ventricle in a week's time. But now it's more than one. Call it miracle, call it whatever you want to. But at least with homeopathy, the baby is doing very well. The baby is still on with Loris Aureus, mother tincture. Every single day, one drop, two drops are given. And I am getting feedbacks daily. I have got the echo report. I've got practically all the reports. But I've yet to see the patient as yet. I've not seen the patient, only heard from them. But I feel very happy. So long as it's my endeavor to try and save the baby as much as possible and give it a life for which it can be compatible. Hopefully, if he or she survives, the baby survives, probably we may construct the missing ventricle, if that is possible, in a later stage. But now, as of now, the survival is important. And that
right,
is
so, right, so basically you stabilize the patient, and then when surgery is necessary at the proper stage of development, you do that. I wanted to actually start today with some quote, which I like to do. And so Lao Tzu says, "Love is of all passions the strongest, for it attacks simultaneously the head, the heart, and the senses." And I think that this is a lot of what you provide. You provide so much hope to people as you talk about the heart and take care of the heart and help other people take care of their heart in all the ways, mentally by their head and taking precautions and good lifestyle, finding ways to have compassion and to use our senses to know what to do in each situation. So today I believe that you wanted to discuss a particular topic about the heart. You had mentioned
congenital heart disease.
Congenital heart disease, so, and palpitation, and that sounds exactly like the example you gave us today.
Exactly. I mean, over the past so many years, at least for past two decades or more, we are consistently seeing more and more cases of congenital heart disease. It's not because that modernization has come, new equipments have come. Initially, we did not have echocardiogram or an angiography. That's why we could not detect. But somehow, I mean, there are so many factors in the environment due to which these congenital heart disorders are increasing tremendously, rapidly. And if homeopathy can provide some answers, I don't say, I mean, we can cure such disorders. But then if, for example, the case which I discussed earlier, if we can help even 1% of people survive, 1% of those parents would be happy, and the joy and the happiness, the love would grow. I mean, I think that if homeopathy can provide, it's a very great contribution to society.
Yes, I think it does provide hope in a different way than allopathy provides hope surgically in emergency settings and certain ways. It has its potential, and so does homeopathic.
Well, who denies allopathic not providing hope? But then surgery is not possible in any and every case. And in those cases where the patient is totally on medications, and somehow, if even allopathic medications may or may not work in many patients at all points of time, other systems of medicines like homeopathy are there to provide a good enough role. We daily and day in and day out, we are discovering the miracles, rather not miracles, but the effects of the dynamic remedies, that is homeopathy. And now, congenital heart disorders was an untapped area. And I'm so happy that we have quite many cases. And in our clinics here in India, Nagpur, we are experiencing the effects of homeopathy in a wide array of patients. I mean, the different types of congenital heart disorders that we get here are like septal defects, where, I mean, the ventricles are separated by a septum. So if you get a hole in the ventricle, which is called ventricular septal defect, or a hole in the atrial septum, which is called atrial septal defect, or we have got cyanotic defects like tetralogy of Fallot's, means it's a compound congenital anomaly, or if the great vessels, I mean the pulmonary artery normally connects the right atrium to the lung, and the aorta connects the left ventricle, the pulmonary artery connects the right ventricle to the lungs, and the aorta connects the left ventricle to the system. If they are transposed, I mean the position changes, then we have a congenital cyanotic anomaly. Now all these and many, many more are purview of congenital heart disease, and we see such cases day in and day out. Many, many of them, although they need to be operated, but the patients are not in a situation where we can be operated. At these times, homeopathy and simple drugs like Carbovege, like antimony tart, like aconite ferox, and many, many more, convallaria, they act tremendously well, stabilize the patient, and help to save them and for a future date if surgery is possible.
Okay. Did you want to give more examples, or how did you want to proceed teaching more about this?
First of all, I mean, seeing why, why has this congenital defects grown so much? What are the reasons? Homeopathically speaking, during Hahnemann's time, I would revisit the concept of miasms. Miasm is a negative force, or we can call as vital force, is a positive force, is a life-enriching force, whereas the negative force is miasm, which is a disease-producing dynamic force. Now, there are three types of dynamic, this miasmatic forces: psora, syphilis, and psychosis. Psora is a functional miasm, a functional negative force, whereas syphilis and psychosis do not to be confused with the diseases of the same name, but Hahnemann has used them for a different purpose. So these, when syphilitic force or syphilitic miasm is activated in utero, then such congenital defects are more prone to happen. As far as exciting factors are concerned, why exactly? Lots and lots of people nowadays in pregnancy are using drugs, antibiotics, steroids, anticonvulsants if the baby is a female, is pregnant and is suffering from epilepsy or convulsion disorder or seizure disorder and is on anticonvulsant drugs, and many patients who are stressed and frustrated, they get pregnant, they are bound to develop pregnancy-induced hypertension, and they may be on antihypertensive drugs. Or if the female is suffering from a valvular heart defect and is on drugs like warfarin, or she is known to consume sedatives, then all these drugs are make the female prone, so that the child may end up having congenital heart disease.
About the male? The male also, if he is taking drugs, does that matter at conception?
I mean, if the male is taking certain drugs like steroids and sedatives and warfarin, but not antihypertensive anticonvulsants, then yes, at the point of conception, some genetic mutations do occur, and they are very well known to produce a host of congenital heart disorders or congenital anomalies, of which congenital heart disorders can be only one form of that anomaly. Likewise, if a female is developing metabolic disorders like diabetes during pregnancy, or she may have diabetes right from before pregnancy, or thyrotoxicosis, thyroid disorders, both hyperthyroidism or hypothyroidism, or hypoparathyroidism, these are very well known to produce congenital heart diseases in children. Likewise, certain disorders like TORCH, T-O-R-C-H, which is very much prevalent in India and the Indian subcontinent, say Asia. T stands for toxoplasmosis. Toxoplasmosis is a parasite which otherwise in normal human beings does not cause any harm. But in a pregnant female, toxoplasmosis is known to cause vast array of congenital anomalies, many of them pertaining to the brain, but some pertaining to the heart. Then,
and that comes from cats?
Yeah. That definitely comes from cats. In India, we don't have a pension for domesticating cats. I have hardly seen Indians domesticating cats. But then,
okay.
In India and the surrounding subcontinent, Indian subcontinent, cats are, they become a part of the family. They are continuously roaming in and around our houses. So, toxoplasmosis is not so rare. We see quite often. In fact, I am sorry to say, we could not save a baby yesterday night at my hospital. The baby was delivered. The mother is positive for toxoplasmosis. And the baby born developed congenital heart disease. The baby was a female child, died an hour later of birth. So, rubella is another virus, which is like the measles virus, and it's very common in Indians and females, and it definitely causes congenital abnormalities of the brain again, as well as of the kidneys and the heart.
Can I ask a question about that?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, so concerning vaccinations, because it is concluded that taking vaccines before you get pregnant is the way to prevent disease. Is this something that you would, your opinion on that?
Well, very good question. Now, the vaccinations before pregnancy. Now, not all females require vaccinations for rubella. At least not in, we don't propagate that. But suppose if the female has got one child who has developed a congenital abnormality, or the baby has died because of some congenital abnormality, then for the next pregnancy, definitely yes. If one of the factors of TORCH is positive, either toxoplasmosis or rubella, or C is for cytomegalovirus or herpes, then yes, a vaccination is inevitable. The female needs to be treated. Not only the female, but the male counterpart, the partner, also need to be treated before they conceive the next issue. That's
okay.
Yes. Other than that, it cannot be a blanket prescription, or it cannot be generalized for all females. We give rubella vaccine, or for that matter, cytomegalovirus vaccine. Or as far as homeopathy is concerned, we have got specific constitutional remedies which can be given before, and if constitutional medicine cannot be given to a female before conception, then we give nosodes like sifalinum or medirhinum. These are very, very effectively known to tackle the menace of this torch, as well as syphilis disease. So, I was talking about TORCH. So, TO is toxoplasmosis, R is rubella, C is cytomegalovirus. Cytomegalovirus is another virus which otherwise is a very silent virus. But when it is during pregnancy, it plays a host of congenital problems in the child, particularly liver problems. And herpes is another virus which can cause a lot of congenital anomalies, particularly of the nervous system, of the skin, of the bones, and rarely of the heart. Then we have got active measles during pregnancy. If the mother suffers from measles or polio or hepatitis or HIV or pulmonary tuberculosis or tuberculosis of that of any organ in the mother, if she is on the drugs or without drugs, these are known factors for congenital heart disorders, at least in our context.
If the mother is on a drug for what, polio, hepatitis, HIV, or tuberculosis? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. I mean, whether polio nowadays is not seen thanks to the vast vaccination which the entire Rotary organization is doing. But polio was initially known to cause a lot of congenital heart disorders. But now, at least talk about hepatitis and HIV. HIV is another very routine problem which we see in mothers today, ladies today, pregnant females, HIV positive females, we ask them to abort, but then certain mothers are adamant not to cause abortion. I mean, they would go away with the pregnancy and continue with the pregnancy. And in such cases, either they, many of them are on drugs or may not be on drugs, but still HIV positive. And we are known to see that congenital heart disease does develop in a newborn child.
Okay. So you're saying that there are many contagious type of diseases that spread, and a woman may be susceptible to having them or being on drugs or getting the disease while pregnant. And the way to address these issues are to...
A good screening. I mean, it's pre-pregnancy counseling. The moment the couple needs to have decided that they want a child, they should go to a gynecologist or a physician at least, and the physician should counsel both the husband and wife about the possible dangers, because it's better not to have a child rather than having a child having suffering from some congenital abnormalities, maybe congenital heart abnormalities or any. It's the entire life of the parents are as it is spoiled, as well as the child who has to suffer.
Yes, so it affects the whole family when one person, especially an infant, is born with these defects or with a very difficult type of handicap that takes all the energy from the family, financial, emotional, everything from them. So you're exactly saying the prenatal counseling is the most important thing. And I know in India you have special programs, government programs for that.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the government of India has realized the potential for such training. And I'm so happy that although India has got a good amount of illiteracy, but then all those illiterate people are very susceptible to suggestions, positive suggestions which you make. In India, we have hypothesis that in pregnancy, you should be the mother should be very happy, should have got good, should see good pictures, should appreciate greenery, should not be sad. So the child born is very happy. This, in fact, is very true. I mean, we have seen those females who are sad during pregnancy or stressed during pregnancy, they also have got such patients, such children who exhibit those emotions after birth in a very great amount of time. Not only that, but they tend to have greater amount of congenital abnormalities as compared to females who are very happy during the entire pregnancy period. They deliver children who are less expected to have congenital abnormalities, including congenital heart disease. This is an observation which you have been making since past 30 years at our hospital in the gynec department. And we, as a matter of fact, make it stress. We call the... in India, we luckily have got joint families. So the husband stays with the mother and father. The wife also stays with the mother and father. The entire family is a huge household. So we counsel each and everyone, right from the mother-in-law, the father-in-law, the husband, the wife also, yes, the husband's brothers and sisters, because they're all staying together. And we tell them that let the female enjoy the entire pregnancy period. Let her wish, let her do whatever she wishes, excepting consuming alcohol or tobacco, which is fortunately very, very less prevalent in India in females. But yes, the government program also has given a great boost to this, and indeed that is why many of the so-called prospective congenital heart cases could have been prevented because of that.
Okay, so basically you're confirming this concept that our mind plays a huge part in our health.
Yes, of course. I mean, initially it was just a taboo. I mean, it's just a placebo effect which we thought, the scientific community thought. But then if you see, I'm sorry, I don't know of any particular study being done. But there's just an observation of many of our clinicians, which we talk day in and day out. And many of the my gynec friends, obstetrics friends, they also comment, yes. And they also recommend to their patients that be happy. And we have seen people who are stressed out, they are sad during their entire pregnant period. Emotions affect the pregnant female also affect, the negative emotions also take toll of the child in the form of congenital heart disease. That is quite true. I mean, may or may not be studied, be corrected or not, but then this is an observation which holds true to a great extent, not only in India, but I believe throughout the world.
Okay, well, this is a huge challenge for anyone who is listening or getting the downloads or the archives, because we are in a world economy, a world situation where there are so many conflicts, a lot of financial, emotional depression, people who are, I think suicide is really on the increase, just so many stresses that students are having difficulties. World competition is so high. So we're talking about how to create a new generation of people that is healthy in mind, body, and spirit. And to do that, we're asking them to be happy and in a difficult world.
And furthermore, what has happened is, in past two or three decades, so initially in India, the man was only the male was the earner, bread earner of the family. The female used to sit in the house and cook. That was the only thing to do. But in recent times, in say past 20, 25 years, many, many females have gone out to work. So many females have been educated. They go out to work. And many females make job their priority. But during pregnancy, so they have got late pregnancy. I mean, they pass the age of, say, 30, 31 years, and then they start plan to have babies. So increased maternal age is a known risk factor for congenital heart disease. I mean, it's a dictum that the family should be complete by the age of 32 years of a female or a 42 years age of male. After that, you are very, very, you may not be very certain, but so the probability of having congenital heart disorders is very high if the female crosses the age of 33 years or the male, the father crosses the age of, say, 44 years during conception. So maternal age is of consequence. I mean, one should ensure that very early in marriage, the age of, say, 21, 22 or 25 years, the female should at least bear children. Her family should be completed by the age of 20, 25 years. So you've got healthy, happy children. No stress of congenital disorders. Maybe heart or maybe other organs. So maternal age is another factor. One very peculiar thing, which I don't know if it's heard or not, but consanguineous marriages. I mean, particularly Indian Muslims.
Please repeat that. What marriages?
Consanguineous marriages. That is marriages between blood relatives.
Oh, okay.
That is very, very much prominent in India, especially in Indian Muslims. I mean, one Indian Muslim girl would, unless if it is not there, would marry someone who's blood relative, excepting the brother. So leaving the brother, real brother, she would marry the...
Cousins?
Cousins, the first cousins. So in such a situation... Now, this happens in practically all, even educated Muslim families. So, in India and Pakistan and Sri Lanka and neighboring countries, it's very much a problem. And in such cases, we do see lots of congenital heart disorders. So, this practice needs to be stopped. And you'll be surprised, Debbie, that many of my patients who are in US, UK, who are basically Indians, but they are residing outside, they also would follow... When it comes to marriage, they would follow this tradition. I mean, so it's not, education has, less to do with them prohibiting consanguineous marriages or marriages between blood relatives. So, but then the gynec or the, this has to take care once, if it's found out that consanguineous marriages are there.
This is also a difficulty, has been here in North Carolina in the mountains. It's well known that family blood relatives would be marrying each other. And so they also see a lot of defects in birth. So it is not that unusual, but it sounds like it's more prevalent practice in India and Pakistan, Sri Lanka, and such countries. So
yeah.
how can this be changed, just through education?
Rather, not education in the literal sense, but social awareness. I mean, awareness in the parents, because love marriages are, the percentage of love marriages is very, very less in India. Percentage of arranged marriages have high prevalence here. So it's actually the elders of the family decide the marriage between the two partners. The partners themselves hardly ever decide. So in such a situation, if you have got clients who are attending your office for some other reasons, and you happen to know that their children are getting married, so you can educate them about the prevalence of congenital heart disorders or the fallacies of such marriages, like blood-related marriages. And at least second cousin or third cousin would do, but not the first cousin, because the genetic mutations are known to occur in such blood-related marriages. That's all. That's what, at the maximum, a homeopath can do.
Yes, that's fact. That is fact. That is genetics. That's the way it works. So, yeah. And if families are aware of the potential for having these troubles, then the people who are making the marriage partners, making the arrangements, can decide in a more educated fashion. Was there anything else you wanted to talk about?
I mean, okay. So these were some of the factors which are, social factors and medical factors which are known to cause congenital heart disorders. But now, suppose if the baby is born, the baby cries after birth, how can a mother know that her child is likely to have a congenital heart disorder? See, many times, many heart disorders are missed even by best of pediatricians, even in the hospital. So it can happen. So it's not a rule that if a doctor misses, doctor has said no to a congenital heart disease, that means it's not there. Sometimes, over a period of, say, 12 days, 13 days, once the female goes from the hospital to the to her house and starts feeding the baby, then she can catch up certain signs so that she may know that her baby could be suffering from congenital heart disorder. Now, what are those signs? If, suppose, after 12 to 14 days of birth, the child starts developing bluish discoloration of the skin or the mucous membrane, particularly of the tip of the nose, particularly around the nose or the tongue, then the mother should alert the pediatrician that her child may be having some sort of congenital heart disorder, unless otherwise proved. Or if the baby, if she's feeding, and the sucking the milk, after a few minutes, the baby starts getting breathless, or if the baby is breathing very heavily, then the baby is likely to have congenital heart disorder. Or the baby is excessively sleepy, or the cry is too weak. It's just a whimper, what we call. That is a very, very pronounced sign that the baby may have a congenital heart disorder. The inactivity, the poor feeding, failure to thrive, all these should alert the mother that my baby may be having congenital heart disease. She should go to her doc, and the doc should examine. And if the doc examines the pulse, and if the pulse is irregular, an arrhythmia, then that is a very, very important case that the baby should be screened completely for congenital heart disease. Many times, if you put a stethoscope, and instead of a lup-dup, 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 that is a normal sound, you hear shh, 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 that is called as a cardiac murmur, then there is no doubt that there is a congenital heart disorder and it needs full screening of the entire baby. So these are few subtle signs that a mother can notice, even if the doctor has missed. Likewise, normally there is a line, the imaginary line connecting the corner of the eye to the ears. In normal babies, if the ear, the 3/4 of the ear should be below this line and 1/4 should be above this line. This line is it has got no name, but it's an imaginary line. Now, if the entire ear is lower between, the entire ear all both the ears, the earlobes are below this line, then they've got what we call as low set ears. Such babies with low set ears have a very, very high chance of congenital heart disease, especially ventricular septal defect. Likewise, when the baby grows up, teething starts, but if the incisors, the front incisors, have a very great spacing between them, such incisors called as Hutchison's incisors or Hutchison's teeth, it's a very, very important sign of a congenital heart disorder being present in the child. Likewise, the brow, the forehead, if the forehead is very, very prominent, more prominent, and is not there within family, none of the people in the family have such a prominent brow, that brow is called Olympian brow, and it's a sign of a syphilitic miasm. Again, a very important external feature that the child may have congenital heart disease. Likewise, a very pointy nose. Pointy nose is called elfin faces, elfin. And more than, see, normally you have got 5 digits in your hand, each hand and foot. If there are 6, it's called polydactyly. Poly means more and dactyly means finger. So polydactyly, if it's there, then there is a pronounced chance of a baby having congenital heart disease. So these are some of the external features where parents can be alerted that their child may be having a congenital heart disease, which may probably be missed by a doctor who was originally attending the child during the hospital stay.
Okay, so there are quite a few external signs that can be observed either by the doctor in the hospital, and you're saying that would a doctor miss like a pointy nose or a pronounced forehead and not realize that this is something that they should take an extra exam about?
Yeah, it happens many times that even the doctor may miss. So, but then that does not mean that your parents should miss. Parents should be aware that their child, because the percentage of congenital heart disorders and congenital diseases in general are increasing day by day. So it is ultimately the mother who knows the child best.
Okay. So where did you want to go from here? You've basically, from the start of the show, given a certain number of social factors and environmental reasons, drugs, other reasons, genetic reasons why there's a potential for cardiac health defect. And so now you've given also what the mother can look for in terms of signs and symptoms during the first days of life. And you also, at the very beginning, gave an example of how a little baby was able to stay, to survive in less of a chance that we would normally imagine with a missing ventricle. So
exactly.
Where do you want to take us now?
Do we have time or should
it's
I sum up?
It's up to you if you want to end the show. You just tell me when. I am here as long as we can go, as long as you like. I did have a question, though, that you mentioned something about the mother and baby being released from the hospital 12 to 13 days after giving birth, and I don't know if that is a typical stay in the hospital in India, but here the mother is often released the next day.
Yeah, that's why what I was going, even in India, if the delivery is normal, we keep the mother only for say 1 or maximum 2 days. But
okay.
Certain congenital disorders, for example, cyanosis, the cyanotic heart disease, or tetralogy of Fallot, what I was telling, F-A-L-L-O-T-S, but it is pronounced
F-A-L-L-O-T-S. Okay,
but it is pronounced as Fallot.
Fallot. Okay.
So
it's like
a
French word.
Yeah, it's a French word. So such cases may not show very early. I mean, not at birth. After say 12 days, 13 days, the baby may start having cyanosis. So in such situation, it is the mother who has to be aware, because she may not take the baby to the doctor. okay. initially. If she's aware, if she knows that something is wrong with my baby, if the baby is going blue, the entire baby may not go blue. Only the tongue may be blue, or only the tip of the nose may be blue, but the baby may not be cold. The extremities may not be blue. So in such situation, again, the mother needs to know that the baby may be having a heart disease, congenital heart disease. So she has to take the baby to the doctor and get her examined, get itself examined.
Okay. There are many other defects, for instance, pyloric stenosis, that may not be observed immediately after the birth.
Exactly. So, I mean, it takes, say, 7 to 14 days. The baby may start feeding well initially, first day, second day, everything is fine. And then the baby starts burping and taking out milk. The mother does not know. So initially she lets go. Okay, maybe, I mean, for day one, day two, day three, she may continue. But after 7 to 14 days, the vomitings keep on increasing. The baby cries with abdominal pain. At that time, the mother may realize that something is really wrong. But then at least 14, 15 days pass and the baby unnecessarily has to suffer. So, certain mothers are aware, so they may take the baby to the doctor, but not everyone does so, and especially with heart disease. Pyloric stenosis obviously would cause pain, but congenital heart disorders do not cause pain. So the baby may not cry, the baby may just show signs of lethargy, fatigue, may not grow, and that can be over a period of say 1 month. So we find patients, mothers coming to us after 3-4 months of delivery, asking us, is something wrong with their babies?
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you lead me today what we want to do next, if we want to end the show or if you have further information, because
yeah, I have...
it may be a while before we're on another show.
So, I've got final points to sum up the entire thing is that all congenital heart disorders are incurable cases. I mean, you cannot cure, but homeopathy as a whole has got a lot to offer symptomatically. We have got lots of medicines for cyanosis. We have got good amount of medications for palpitations. There are specific medications to reduce pulmonary artery pressure, which we had already discussed in the last show. The certain drugs being Convalaria Megalis, Antimony Ars, and Carbovich. You may note down. I mean, they may be helpful. Convalaria Megalis, Ars, and Carbovich. These three at our center have been known to reduce pulmonary artery pressure. Now, many females come and ask, I mean, many mothers come and ask, or parents come and ask us, that, doctor, you are practicing homeopathic cardiology. So, our baby has got a ventricular septal defect. So, that means a hole in the interventricular septum. Now, do you have got medications which can correct that? No, homeopathy medicines cannot close defects because that defect is a structural defect and homeopathy medicines are dynamic in their action. Rather, no medicines in the world can close defects. But as a matter of fact, clinically we have seen that the ventricular septum consists of two parts, the muscle part and the fibrous part. So if the hole is in the muscular part, then it usually corrects itself by 2 years of age. If the patient is hemodynamically stable, then no surgery needs to be done for up till 2 years of age. Even if the hole does not close after 2 years of age, and if the baby is well, plays well, the parameter to assess the baby is well is the activity. If the baby is playing well, is growing well, then no need to worry, let the hole be there in its place. What is important is the human being as a whole, not the hole in the heart, not in the hole in the septum. So it is imperative not to get too much perturbed about VSDs, because many VSDs and ASDs, ventricular septal defects and atrial septal, do close on their own, and nothing should be done, at least not surgery, unless it is absolutely required and if the doctor insists, the pediatrician insists, that the surgery should be done.
It shows the way the body can heal itself in many instances, that what you see initially, the body has a way to compensate. Even my own grandson was missing the corpus callosum and the brain and the ventricle, and he's perfectly fine, even though they thought he would be an invalid.
Yeah, so there are so many, many cases. We have to give nature its own sweet time and not rush up with surgeries and get ourselves put out by such things. Unless it is very, very essential. When I say very, very essential, it seems to us that the child may not live. Only in such situations we may go in for surgery. Other than that, lots of time can be given for these defects so that the body adapts itself very, very well. And many cases, I say nearly 60% of cases, the bodies adapt to those situations even if it can't heal that defect or abnormality. But the body mechanisms adapt to in such a way that the entire human being, the organism, is fully functional in a very great variety of ways, in which unimaginable, rather. The clear example is one case which I gave at the start of the program. In spite of a missing ventricle, the book says that by 7 days, this child should no longer be there. But now it's more than 1.5 months, 1 month. The child is kicking, drinking milk well, and is crying, and the parents are so very happy. So, I mean, we have to wait and watch.
Secondly, you know, if I may, there is even a tendency today to do intrauterine surgery, which I understand does have phenomenal results in many cases. So, you know, there
exactly.
are...
Exactly.
Mm-hmm, go ahead.
Yeah, it's a very good point. Intrauterine, but then such facilities are available in very, very specialized centers, even in countries like United States and United Kingdom. But of course, in this part of the world, I mean, in India and Indian subcontinent, Asia, we don't have any of these such such hospitals. They may be there in Singapore and Japan, but then intrauterine cardiac surgeries are hardly ever done. First, number one, the skills are not there, and secondly, the expertise, and thirdly, the cost. The cost factor is so great that very, very few people, elite, rich, can afford such surgeries. But so, of course, if that can be done, if that needs to be done, then it's one case in a million. But we are talking about general. Also, many of these defects make the child susceptible to catch cold. For example, a VSD or a patent ductus arteriosus or an ASD, they may make the child catch a lot of cold. So the child frequently gets hospitalized for pneumonia. So if the patient is under homeopathic treatment, if the child is under homeopathic treatment, very efficiently we can reduce the tendency to catch cold and the tendency for pneumonia. So hospital stay decreases, and in spite of the VSD being there or an ASD being there or aortic stenosis being there, still the child may not end up in pneumonia, and the cold may only settle down on the nose or at the most throat, but may not go to the lungs. So that is a very, very big thing homeopathy can offer in such children.
Did you want to mention any remedies for this or not?
Yeah. Particularly, I mean, certain remedies like calcarea carbonicum, calcarea phosphorus, silicea, sulfur, kali carbonicum, kali sulf, kali ars. All these remedies are very, very well known to cure the patient of pneumonia, tendency to catch cold, and increase the growth rate to a near normal pace in such children. And we do it daily with our patients.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So it's up to you now whether you would like
no,
to...
No, I mean, I have yet not finished.
Okay.
yeah. There are times when a homeopath may be called to manage some crisis. I mean, for example, one of my patients who was admitted in an allopathic hospital, but then I was called because I am a homeopath, that whether I could do something for that child. So the commonly used homeopathic drugs for crisis, any congenital heart disease crisis, are arsenic alb, carbovich, and aconite ferox. These three remedies are the most commonly used drugs.
Repeat them again. Arsenicum album, carboveg, and what was the antimonium tart?
Aconite ferox.
Aconite, okay.
Yeah. Generally, all babies with congenital heart disease should be nursed in semi-erect posture. Normally, after nursing, the baby should be given a burp. But in congenital heart disease, once it's proved, all babies with congenital heart disease should be nursed in semi-erect posture because this increases the oxygen of the inspired air by more than 30%. Also, in India, we have a habit of massaging the babies at least for a period of, say, 1 year, 1.5 years. A good body massage is given daily by specialist masseurs. And so for in India, or people who give massage to the babies, we advise that the massage be continued for at least for a period of 2.5 years for the baby. And the oil used for massage is coconut oil in this part of the country, world. At that part of the world, olive oil would be best for massage. Now, this massage plays a very, very important role in circulation of the blood, and we have definitely seen the beneficial effects of the massage, at least in the Indian subcontinent.
And it feels good too.
Yeah, that I don't know about the baby, how good the baby must be feeling, but in adults, it really does feel good. Lastly, one of the very, very important roles homeopaths can play. See, there are times when your patients may have a baby who has a congenital heart defect. In such case, once the baby, if the parents have such a baby and they want a second child, in such cases, if they are on the homeopathic care, then both the parents individually should be given constitutional drugs, or if not possible, at least a nosode, say either tuberculinum or medorhinum or cephalinum, depending upon the family history, so that their next child would be bereft of such congenital disorders. And it's now, say, 30-35 years we have been doing such a therapy. And not only me, but my father and my mother, they all are homeopaths, of course. And for such a long time, even if we are not able to treat the congenital heart disease patients, but if we know that the parents are opting for a second child, then we definitely, before conception, treat the mother, treat the father independently. And we have not known a second child in the family to be having congenital heart disease or congenital disorders per se. So your homeopaths can be great genetic counselors and a very, very big help to the society.
It sounds very interesting. I know that there would probably be people raising their hand in a seminar, especially if they were medical physicians or research scientists, to say that using a homeopathic energy medicine could change the genetics of the outcome for a child. And do we have an explanation for this, or just the knowledge? Is there a database of of parents? Go ahead.
Scientific explanations for many things may not be there at this point of time, but then the day is not far when we may prove that homeopathy has got tremendous role in genetics as well. But then much work needs to be done on this front. We have only seen this in clinically for past so many years, and we are so much satisfied with this observation, and that is why what I wanted to share. I agree that as a scientist, I would not believe these words per se, but yes, it is a matter of fact, and I speak for many of the conscientious physicians throughout the world who practice such type of homeopathy, that they can definitely give a congenital-free baby, rather I should say, to next baby if one is already defective. So by just for giving the constitutional drug or giving nosode regarding the family. Of course, I have no explanations why it does so and how it can be scientific explanations, but then this is an observation which we are doing at our center, and I would want the world to take care. Explanations can come later on.
Even if we had the data and the numbers of a small percentage of second or third or fourth children after one had a defect, what would the statistics say in such cases? And so this would really be a great project. If anybody wants to take it up and start collecting data, we could have something to show for this.
Indeed, I mean, we have got, after BHMS, we have got MD in homeopathy. And I urge people, MD students, at least in India, who are doing MD, they can take up as a thesis topic, because we have got lots and lots of good homeopaths around in India who are following this practice, and they can really take up, so that tomorrow, once we have got genetics in a great amount of, in this genetic study becomes the order of the day, even homeopathy can play a good role, and certain explanations which are hidden today can be scientific explanations, can come out tomorrow. So this is a matter of study. But what I am speaking is a matter of observation and case studies.
I want to thank you for getting out late at night. And I know that you have surgery early in the morning and all sorts of things. And I'm looking forward to our future shows, because these are thoroughly enjoyable, so educational, creating awareness. We may be touching people out in many countries that we would not even imagine, that will give you a call and you'll be able to help them. Do you want to just give us your website?
Yeah, the website is www.homeoacad.org.
Okay. Homeoacad.
.org.
Okay, great. So I want to wish you a very, very good week, a successful week. We are going into our Thanksgiving holiday time, so we're going to be on break until after that. And the folks who listen to the show, just go on to blogtalkradio.com/homeopathyworldcommunity. Put reminders on, check what shows are coming up. We've got a show with Grant Bentley on Monday night about facial analysis. We usually have Thursdays with Alan Phillips about vaccinations and your rights in the United States. Thursdays after that at 1 p.m. is Dr. Christina Chambreau, pets and your homeopathy, how she's been teaching us how to take a case. And we're just continuing with these wonderful shows with Dr. Adil from India. Thank you again so much.
Thank you, Debbie. It was so much fun to be with you here. And I pray that you also have a very happy Thanksgiving week ahead. Entire family enjoy. God bless.
God bless everyone.
Thank you for listening to Heart Health and Homeopathy on Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio with homeopath Debbie Brock and Dr. Adil Chimthanawala Kasim, MD cardiologist. We encourage you to follow our show, click the reminder button to receive email notices when the show airs, and share with friends on Facebook and Twitter. Please send in your comments and questions, and we'll see you next time.